Welcome to the Breakthrough Success Podcast, helping you achieve that breakthrough you've always been looking for in your business. And now your host, Mark Guberti.
Hello and welcome. I am your host, Mark Guberti, and this is the podcast for marketers and small business owners who are looking for the breakthrough for their businesses. I'm very excited about this show. We are going to discuss how to generate recurring revenue from a blog with Erin Chase. Erin is the $5 dinner mom who only spends $5 for a dinner that still tastes good and fills you up. She teaches millions of people how to live that $5 dinner lifestyle on her blog and through her social networks. And now it is my pleasure to welcome Erin to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
My pleasure, Erin. The way I like to start most episodes is I like to ask people what got them interested in what they're currently doing. So you chose blogging as a way to promote the $5 dinner lifestyle. What specifically attracted you to blogging?
So I started blogging not knowing that it was going to turn into a business. I started sharing what we were having for dinner and was connecting with other bloggers at the time and kind of working together and sharing content of each other's. And it just sort of kind of bubbled up and grew quickly because of the concept. And, you know, it's a concept that is intriguing. It's like, oh, no, that's not possible to do. But yes, it is. Once you really start looking into it and kind of tracking along and following the advice that we share and, you know, starting to make the inexpensive recipes that we share on the website as well. And so it, part intrigue, part like, oh, actually, this works. And this is really helpful. Like my whole goal ever since the very beginning of blogging, just I really started just to share kind of for fun. And it quickly turned into a job because there was just, you know, with comments and emails and growing the social channels, it's, you know, a job now. But doing all of this, my goal has always been to help people save money, help people work smarter in the kitchen, and help people just, you know, be less stressed around getting dinner on the table for their family every single night.
At what moment did you see yourself going from just blogging to get these ideas out to still doing that, but realizing you now have a brand behind what you're doing?
Probably within the first 3 months did I see any pennies come in, really. It was not much at the beginning. And it was pretty quick. I would say the moment that I knew that it was a brand and that I was going to be married to it forever was the moment that I signed on with a literary agent I wrote 3 cookbooks, traditionally published cookbooks back in, 2010, 2011, 2012. So when I look back at the history of all of this, it's that moment that I signed first with a literary agent that, you know, she believed in me enough and then landed the book contracts. I thought, okay, we're in it to win it here now. So
it's very interesting how you mentioned that you got started early with the whole business concept, because in my experience, it takes bloggers a little longer than a few months to realize, hey, I have a brilliant business idea here. But regardless of when you start, there are definitely some ups and downs within the journey. And I want to know, what was the low point within the $5 dinner brand's journey?
I don't know that low point. We've always kind of been on the up and up trajectory. There was a period in 2000, I started in 2008. So there was a period in 2010. I'm going to go with 2010. I'm pretty sure that's when it was, the spring of 2010. We hit a traffic plateau, which is basically, it was a lot of traffic at the time, but we hit a plateau and we were on that plateau for about 6 months. I wouldn't call it a low point because we continued to share content. We continued to share the valuable content. We had just hit this low. And it was actually, I got in pretty early with Pinterest, and it was then Pinterest that pulled us off of that traffic plateau, if you will. And that, I think, is probably, I would say, the biggest low point, although it's really not that
it's
low.
Not a low point. I know what you mean.
It's really
by
not.
That.
It's been, I don't, I was, I, that's kind of tough to answer because we really have been on the up and up. And I think that part of that is our commitment to delivering quality content. Now, I'm in a somewhat unique situation because I'm blogging about recipes, and there are like a bajillion different ways that you can work with food, right? And so I almost have this somewhat unlimited amount of content that I can share over time. But it's, I think, our commitment to providing that valuable content beyond recipes too, articles, tips, how to do this. We do a lot of cooking demos. I now do a weekly Facebook Live cooking show. I just did an episode this morning. So, you know, I think it's just our commitment to continue to deliver that quality content. And then too, this brand is very personality driven. You know, it's Erin Chase behind all of it. And so, you know, my commitment to keep myself out there, I do actually, in addition to our cooking demo video that we do every week, I also do a daily live Facebook video, just to talk and learn and chat with our, the folks who are our members and the folks who are our, who are new to the website, to teach them more about all the things that we have going on. And so, you know, being consistent and keeping myself out there, I think has also been a part of all of the success that we've had.
Now, I love that you mentioned Facebook Live, because live streaming, it seems like it's been around forever, even though it's really just gotten popular within like 2016. How is it going with you and Facebook Live? Like, what are some of the things you're doing with Facebook Live to communicate with your audience?
Okay, that's funny you said that. So when Hangouts, Live Hangouts first came out, when was that, 2014? Is that right? 2015, 2014, 2013?
One of those.
When they first came out, I was like, oh, I'm going to do a live cooking video from my laptop, right? Just on my webcam on my laptop. So I kind of propped it up in the kitchen on the corner. So it's kind of shooting at me and my stove, right? And I'm doing this live video. And my oldest son, who would have been, he was 8 at the time. So it was 3 years ago. So, he comes and starts like spanking himself behind me, like over my shoulder on live video. And I'm like, my very first one ever. And this was back like when it was kind of novel. So a lot of people watched it and I was mortified. But of course, whatever real life, I have four boys, like this is just how our life is, right? And I'm very open and very real about everything. Like when we have Facebook Lives in the afternoon, when they're all home from school, they're all running around and it's just chaos, right? Which is fine. That's part of it. But I think with Facebook Live, there are, you know, we have an actual, like, I'm treating Facebook Live as if it were like a television show. So we have a production schedule. We share ahead of time what we're making with a graphics template. With the recipe and the ingredients and whatever. So if people want to make it with us, they can, or make it that night or whatever. So I think I treat it as if it were like a television show. So production, like calendar, we have the graphics, the marketing graphics to go with it. And then I just have a lot of fun and I just act like a goofball. But it's helpful information, right? I get straight to the point. I try to keep them really short. Like when we would do our cooking demos, I think the longest one I've ever done is 15 minutes, but I try to keep them under 10 minutes. And when I do my daily dish shows, I try to keep those under 5, just to be quick and to the point. And pretty much what I do, I try to remember to do this. I don't really have a script that I follow because I think you just kind of get into a routine and a rhythm over time. But I do a quick what the video is when I start. Within the first 20, 30 seconds, I do what the video is. I talk to the replay viewers because no one's on the live video yet. I say, hey, if you're watching the replay, scroll ahead about 30 seconds, maybe a minute, and we'll get started with the recipe. I like to welcome my friends who are watching live. So I always say something like that to the start. And I think that increases the retention rate is not the right word, but it increases the people who are catching the replay, which is a lot more. We see a lot more replay viewers than we see live viewers. It helps them know to go ahead and just get right into the content versus sitting there waiting for me talking to the people who are live, right? And so that's one thing I do. I also ask people to, I try to ask questions that would, that get them to hit the like or the heart. I try to be silly so people will hit the silly thing, the haha button. Because when people do that, it extends the reach of the live video while you're on the live video. And I do ask people to share it. Even on the one I did this morning, I just straight up shared, I want you to share this because this recipe is amazing and I know your friends are going to like it. So share it so it shows up in their feed. I straight up said it, right? So it's not like, but you know, you have to tell people what to do. And I think giving them a call to action while they're watching you, has really helped us with our success. And with these live videos, I haven't done a lot of, you know, boosting them after the fact. I just try to let them live natively, within our page. But I think because we have this sort of show concept happening, you know, I talk about them as if this is an episode. People know they can go look on my videos tab and see all the different shows that we've done or videos that we've done. So I think that that's been, part of the reason that we did it. And I just committed to doing it. The very first one I did was in July, of the cooking demos that I did was in July, this past July. I had done oodles of Periscope videos before that. So pretty comfortable, you know, talking in front of a camera. So I just committing to do it and just doing it. And then wrapping sort of the production, schedule or calendar and plan around it, has been really helpful, made it a lot easier for me to do this on the regular.
So those are some great strategies to getting more people to see your Facebook Live videos. And they all make a lot of sense because it's all based on the engagement and getting people to share and come back for more. And how do you exactly translate that into blog traffic? And more specifically, what works for you when it comes to building an audience for your blog?
So blog traffic from the Facebook Live videos, I share a link on the video. Like, so this morning I did a recipe. I shared the link to where that lives on our website. So that's really helpful when we do the Daily Dish Live videos. It's generally related to what topics or themes we're talking about that particular week, or it's related to a promotion or something that we have going on with one of our products. And so I would link to a product page. And that has been really, really helpful. Facebook is notorious for putting the kibosh onto any posts that are selling anything. So if I'm saying, hey, we have this new membership program, they would be like, nope, we're not showing that to anybody. But they haven't figured out yet, although I'm pretty sure they will soon, that it's a lot easier to share and get expanded reach for a product when you're doing it through live format. They haven't put the kibosh on that yet, but I imagine they will at some point. They'll figure out that technology. But anyways, we grow the traffic using our Facebook channels, getting people to share. The more that you do that, like our number of likes per week go up significantly when we have a post that's going quasi-viral, because it just is, it's that natural / viral exposure to other people who've never heard about us before. And it all goes back for me, I think, a huge part of the success is the brand name, which I didn't name that on purpose. It was just what this is, what this is, right? But it goes back to that. This is intriguing, and this is, but this is doable. Sort of, I don't know, concept behind all of it.
Now, if you get all of this blog traffic, the way that you support yourself obviously is to make revenue from the blog traffic, and you specialize in making recurring revenue for your blog. How exactly do you do that?
So $5 dinners with traffic has revenue streams coming from ad networks. So we have ads on the website. We also have a number of affiliate partnerships set up. So when we share something related to the brand, we have affiliate commissions. So those are actually the two, really the only two revenue streams for $5 dinners at this point. But over the last three and a half years, I suppose, we have sort of spun off new brands, new websites, new products that are all connected and related to $5 dinners. And so those products are our we have two membership programs. We have, and now two courses. And so those are all kind of under the umbrella of $5 dinners. And so $5 dinners is where we share all the recipes. It's where we, you know, it's where Pinterest drives traffic. It's where Facebook drives traffic to. And we're providing a ton of information and value through $5 dinners. And if you want to go further in your journey with meal planning or cooking, or now we have this new Instant Pot class, right? If you want to go further and deeper into that, into each of those little areas, that's why we have the programs and products that we have available. So that we've kind of spun out these different products that are related. So $5 dinners, you know, you'll hear people talk about, well, you need to offer a free this or a free that, and then you have your paid program. And that's $5 dinners is and always will be kind of that free hub, I guess. And there are thousands of posts there, right? There's so much information there. And then we do, we have certain, so on a freezer friendly recipe, we would have information about our freezer meal plan membership. On our most popular recipes, we have information about our weekly meal plan membership. On our articles about saving money on groceries, we have information on our grocery savings course. And then we have this new Instant Pot one that we actually just launched this month. And so we are working on kind of connecting all of those pieces so that $5 dinners then becomes almost like the hub for all of these, like if it's a wheel, right? At the center of the wheel and all the spokes coming off of it.
So you mentioned how within blog posts, if it seems appropriate, you connect the content from the blog post to a membership site. Are there any other methods you're using to get more members to your membership sites?
So we have that. We have sidebar ads. We have a lot of great content, you know, then with an opt-in in it. So we have information like this. I have this concept called time blocking that is, you know, as it applies to the kitchen. You could use it in any area of life, but I have it as it applies to kitchen. And that post, we have information about our grocery savings class, and it's an opt-in to a workshop. Right. And so that's really one of the main ways that we do it. Social, obviously, we have pretty decent sized social channels that we can share all this information on. Again, the Facebook Live, when we have a promotion going on, we did a price increase for our membership recently. So I got on Facebook Live and I'm like, hey, look, can't say I didn't warn you. I'm telling you right now, the prices are going up. I'm letting you know, get grandfathered in. So just using our social and our content marketing. I would say in the marketing world, we have really drilled in and pretty much nailed the social media and content marketing. We do a small amount of paid spend for our paid content. Not much at all. Most of it's been organic. Affiliate marketing, I suppose. We do have a pretty good sized team of affiliates who share our programs with their readers as well.
And you mentioned having that team of affiliates, and it's very useful to have people promoting your membership site, them getting a piece of the commission, you getting more sales. And I see how that all connects together, but people who create their own products and they want to have affiliate programs, they're wondering, how do I recruit my own affiliates?
So I've been doing this a long time, right? I started almost 8.5 years ago. And I think that a huge part of my success has been my network of fellow bloggers. And, you know, we share their stuff, they share our stuff, because we don't have that content or we don't write about that. So I want to share that with other people, and they don't write about groceries, so they want to share about groceries. And I think too, we really have high caliber programs and courses. And so we do a little bit of outreach, a little bit of affiliate outreach, really not much. We should probably press more on that. I'll make a note. but we do, I think mostly through our network. Like I posted on my personal Facebook page yesterday and it got shared like crazy off my personal page, which is a little bit unusual for me. I don't share a ton of business stuff on my personal page. But because it's the Instant Pot and because it's the hot trend right now, we had several people say, hey, I want to be an affiliate for this. And so you just keep it out there, keep it out there, keep it out there. And then I just have a link on the bottom of our homepage, I believe, that says become an affiliate. It's just a link. It's there. It's very unobtrusive, but it's there. And people find us through that as well. And then just friends, affiliates say, oh my gosh, I just made, you know, $1,000. They tell all their friends and they want to come join, right? You know, and two, it's again, it, you know, and we try to educate our affiliates. We teach them, we give them messaging, we give them swipe copy, we give them graphics, we give them samples of great other posts that other affiliates have done. So we really try to equip them. I have an affiliates manager who manages all of this, our affiliate program specifically. And it, I think by equipping them and giving, you know, making it easy for them, you'll have a higher chance that they'll share it, they'll do better, you'll do better, and everybody's winning.
So you mentioned case studies of affiliates saying that they've made thousands of dollars by selling your membership sites. And I understand that part of that success is getting the members and those members staying within your membership site. When new members come, whether you get them or an affiliate gets them, how do you make sure that those members stick around?
Oh my gosh, membership sites, that's a whole nother conversation. So I am more interested in our retention rate than our new customer rate. And we spend a lot of time watching people use the site, which sounds a little creepy, but I use Lucky Orange to do that. We spend a lot of time talking with our members, making sure that they're having success. We have a really fantastic Facebook group that is super supportive, and we just have a lot of fun in there. We post a lot of fun and silly stuff as well as helpful information. I'll pop in on a Facebook Live every now and then to a group. And so we, I think just making sure that they're getting the information they need. We recently did a redesign of our member area. That was last month, I suppose. We launched that last month. And it was a completely different layout. And it was basically a step one, step two, step three, you know, orientation almost. Because their success is my number one priority. And them getting results from the membership is, or from our program, from our meal, our freezer meal plan program is, again, my number one priority. And so I want to make sure that we're doing that well. And that's why we track and watch so closely and, you know, ask for feedback, see how people are doing. I sent somebody my cell phone number yesterday. She called me, you know, so just being committed to their success, I think, is a huge part of it. And then designing your membership program, your onboarding, your design of your site, of your member area, I think is really important. Educating people and then continuing to give value and continuing to improve your program or your product.
So with all this revenue that you make from your membership sites, your ads, and everything else that you make from the $5 dinner brand, how exactly do you use that revenue for your business? You said you don't do much paid ads, but is there a key component to how you reinvest the revenue back into your business?
Up until this point, which we'll probably ramp up the paid spend here pretty quickly now that we've kind of leveled off. I launched the freezer membership less than a year ago, and it's when I look back, it's kind of ridiculous how much we have built mobile apps, full-on mobile apps, web apps, design, redesigns, da-da-da-da. Fantastic developers on the team, right? But I think I have invested in the tools and in the people. Or in my team, I suppose, the people being my team. And so I think that now that we've kind of leveled off and, you know, we know how much time it takes to do X, Y, and Z and how much it costs to develop X, Y, and Z, now we'll be able to take some of what I would have invested in those things and investing into paid spend. But I think you know, you kind of have to look at, okay, if you want to scale, do you borrow money to do that? Do you just, I cash flowed it. I just took the cash flow and just every single week would actually, I check it every day, but every single week would then make the decision on, okay, where's this $2,000 going to go this next week? Where is it? What's it going to do? Are we going to hire somebody new? Are we going to, add this? Are we going to actually I shouldn't say that. I did up the ad spend yesterday. For our new product. But I think for me, I've always invested in our team, because if I've got the right talent and the right people on the right job, that has been the key to our fast growth, and our fast, being able to get everything off the ground quickly. And so the team would be, you know, developers, assistant, content manager, Facebook, group manager, right? So we have, data entry as well. We have a data entry component to our membership program. And so investing in the team has really enabled this to grow so quickly. And so I think you have to decide, okay, am I going to invest in paying to get this information in front of, you know, my market, or am I going to invest in people helping me get this going faster?
That is a good question, because you want to get your content out there, but at the same time, if you're spending so much time trying to do that, you don't have enough time to pursue other things.
Right. So if you spend a lot of money to get a lot of people to become your members or consume your content, then become your members, and you don't have the customer support infrastructure in place, you basically just put your money in the wrong place, right? Like you almost have to be, and I say this would be a skill of mine, maybe humbly, I can see three steps ahead of where we are now. And I can make the decisions that we need to make now, seeing where we're going to be three steps ahead from now. Like customer service and my content assistant were the first two official hires that I had in our new membership program. They were easy hires because they were already doing customer service for my other program, right? So it was just kind of an easy transfer. But there is absolutely no way, if I was bogged down with customer support emails, me personally, we wouldn't have had anything developed, right? I wouldn't have been able to even had time to have a call with the developers. So I think that me personally, I have always been on the invest in a team to help you build, get it where you need to be, and then invest, which is where we're at actually right now with that particular program, and then get it to invest, and then take that revenue you kind of use to build it, and then move into the paid spend.
Aaron, you've shared a lot of great lessons for us throughout this episode, but I know that throughout every person's journey, they always come across that one lesson that really empowers them differently from other lessons. So what was the best lesson that you have learned on your journey so far?
Oh, my word. The best lesson. Okay, this is totally unrelated. Unrelated to social media, blogging, whatever. The best lesson that I have learned, and I have read, oh my gosh, 50 maybe, kind of small business entrepreneurial related books in the last 3 years. And I would say that the best lesson that I have learned came from Mike Michalowicz's book, Profit First. And it's just about me. I was kind of on the hunt for, I didn't love the way that we were managing our business finances. And I just was on the hunt for something different. And I read a couple of different books that weren't really helpful. And then I read that and it was just like, light bulb. Okay, well, this is how we're handling this. So we have, that's how we run the finances for the Freezer Meal Plan membership, because it's its own business. And then we're transitioning the $5 dinners business to that same model. And it's been really impactful. And it just helps. It's the concept of it and the practicality of it has helped me make smarter decisions with the business finances. And, you know, when to invest in this, when to invest in that. Like I said, I've made the decisions all as we've gone to bring in new people. And then, you know, that's gotten us to where we are now. And now it's, you know, now we're funneling that to paid spend. But the name of the book is Profit First. And it basically flips the traditional accounting model backwards. And it's really interesting. I'm not going to tell you any more about it. You can go, I think he's got a podcast or a website. You can go look it up. But I think that if I were to say what is the most important thing I've learned, it would be that.
Profit First is a great book. I actually did read it. I even had Mike Michalowicz on the podcast.
Oh, nice. Nice.
So I'll definitely include a link in the show description and send that to you as well.
Perfect. Yeah, I would love to listen to it. I know of him from years ago, and I read this and was like, fan. I'm a fan for life. So very cool.
I know exactly what you mean. Anyway, going from motivation at this point, I ask you, what is one awesome inspirational quote you can think of right now?
My favorite, it applies to both myself and my business, as well as I tell my people all the time, my members, those who fail to plan, plan to fail. The flip of that is make your plan and act on it. It's not super inspirational, but it can make a dramatic difference when you have that mentality in planning, both your day, your meals, your business, all the things, having that plan, plan for your habits. I mean, you could apply that to anything, right?
There's so many.
And that is maybe not a driving force for me, but that is kind of a thought and a quote that I have. Like, you got to have the right plan. You got to have the right plan. You got to have the right plan. And I think that's been a part of our team success, is that we all know where we're at in the plan. We all know what we're doing. And when we build out a new plan, everybody knows what they're doing and who's doing what and when it needs to be delivered and yada, yada. So I think that that kind of is like, okay, well, that's not going to get out the door if we don't have a plan for that. So that's kind of a, I don't know, inspirational or kind of motivating concept for me.
It is a good concept, that whole idea of planning. I use it in my life, like, well beyond business. I really believe it goes personal and professional when it comes to planning. It's just so powerful. Anyway, Aaron, I wanted to thank you for taking the time to be on my podcast. Before we conclude this episode, though, I want to give you the opportunity to let all of my listeners know where they can find you on the web.
Best place to find me and all of the things I've sort of mentioned here and there is $5dinners.com. So that's the number 5. $dinners is all spelled out, $5dinners.com.
Aaron, it was such a pleasure to have you on my podcast. Thank you for taking the time to do this interview.
Sure. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
I thoroughly enjoyed that interview. The concept behind Aaron's brand is within the name itself, $5 dinners. I like that initial branding and also how Aaron continues to promote her brand while generating recurring revenue from her blog. If you want to generate recurring revenue from your blog, then you absolutely must have a membership site. Products are good, they make revenue, but only membership sites and services will allow you to generate that recurring commission that is easier for you to scale. If you forgot to take notes, then don't worry. We've got you covered with the show notes. Visit markgaverty.com/E30 for those. You can ask your questions over there, which I'll be more than happy to answer. To never miss an episode, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on whatever player you are using. If you are a regular listener and haven't done so already, I would greatly appreciate it if you could give this podcast a review or a rating. Two ways you could do this are through markgaverty.com/iTunes or markgaverty.com/Stitcher. That ends this episode. Don't forget, dream big, achieve greatness, and unlock your potential today. How does over 100 retweets per day sound to you? My free ebook, 27 Ways to Get More Retweets on Twitter, has you covered. I use the methods within this ebook to get over 10,000 retweets every single quarter. To learn more and get access to this free resource, visit markgaverty.com/retweet. This podcast is a production done by Mark Gaverty. For more insights, head on over to markgaverty.com.